This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almacead. Almacead is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almacead. Find out more and see the university studies at almacead.com. That's almased.com.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Well, it's officially Thursday, and I say that for our own benefit because we're pretty convinced here that it's Friday, and it's not.
I've been convinced that it's Friday since Tuesday, though.
You can't have a week full of Fridays.
Well, that's true.
You're just figuring that out every day.
It's so bad, I almost put Ryan's open for Annie's show in the 2 o'clock hour.
Oh, man. I'm just going to tell you, if you do that, I'm not working the next day. That's how that's going to go.
We can all call off.
Yeah. I'll just come in and do Wiggins America in the morning. Mark can deal with it.
So let's talk a little bit about this photo op / message that was delivered from Kristi Noem. She goes to this jail. Do we have a video?
I don't have the video.
Okay. So she goes to this jail and she's looking all Kristi Noem. Is it Kristi or Kirsty? It's Kristi.
Kristi. Yeah. The question is it Noem or Gnome?
Gnome. Like garden.
Like Kristi the Gnome.
We can do whatever we want here. We were having an off-air conversation yesterday about the presentation of governor, now secretary. Is it human health? It's not Health and Human Services. It's Department of Homeland Security.
Yes.
Is she the secretary of the Department of Homeland Security?
I just always hear her referred to as the head of the department.
Well, she always looks ready.
Dapper.
That's no.
Oh, no?
No.
Okay. That, you would know better. I don't really know those adjectives.
I think she's pretty.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
None of this factor. Nobody has yet had this conversation about Sean Duffy at transportation.
Well, so, not on air. No.
He's a very handsome guy, though. So dapper, some might say.
Yeah, some might say.
Some.
I would never say that off air or on air.
Gnome, she's always camera ready. You can't not be at this point. This is the problem, men who don't know these things about women, that whatever your facial presentation is, like, what is your median enter into public face? Everything is from there. And here's the truth. You get to choose what the median is. Your face is perplexed.
Yeah. So you're saying there's like an average face you have to have, and sometimes it's a little better and sometimes it's worse?
It's not an average face that you have to have. There's an average face that you choose to present to the world as your baseline.
Okay.
Some, I'm going to say most, but it really depends on age, because my understanding, and I've experienced this myself, the older you get, the less you care about what that is for yourself. But the baseline is, for me, the baseline is mascara.
Okay.
I'll put mascara on. If I don't have mascara on my eyes, people think that I've come down with cancer. They're like, Annie, what's wrong?
Yeah.
And I'm like, just my face.
I think that I've said that before.
Yes, I'm sure you have. That I have some sort of like condition or chronic illness that they didn't know about and they're seeing it. That's just the baseline face. Most people who say, Annie, everything okay? Mean well.
And most people just don't say that. which is my folly.
More people than you think. But I'm sure that whenever you did say that to me, it was not meant to be like, you look like crap, which is what you said to Ethan the other day.
Well, I say that to Ethan almost every day.
He said it in a different way, too.
He's just jealous.
So you create a baseline, and then when you're going out to an event, turn the volume up a little bit. You know, you do a little more to the hair. You do a little bit more to the makeup. If you're going to do some sort of athletic activity or whatever, what? What are you pointing at?
She's on TV right now.
I know. She looks fantastic.
She does. She looks great.
Yes.
That's not base level Kristi Noem.
No, that is. She's got a hat on, and she's dressed a little bit more. She's like dressed for work. Like she's,
so it's like casual Noem.
Yes. But it still looks great. And I will say that most women who present themselves out and about daily, they want to look nice, but they also aren't going to spend a lot of extra time investing in upping their game. This is what I got. Some people don't do that at all. Some people don't wear makeup at all. Some people don't mess with their hair at all. Totally fine. The real idea of feminism applied to this is that you get to choose. And nobody out there in the world gets to shame you into thinking you have to present yourself a particular way. If you're confident in the way you present yourself, okay, fine.
I like that she just wears a hat and it's like, I'm going to work because that's what I do.
Casual.
Yeah.
Yes. Dressing you guys down. Are the same.
Yeah.
Same hair.
Me and Kristi Noem pretty much have the same resume.
Yeah. It's surprising that you're not in charge of Homeland Security.
I made my pitch. I didn't get an email back.
So
she did.
She is in what I would say near full-on glam, standing in front of a jail cell full of gang members in their underwear.
Yes, they are. And they look like they are stacked three high.
They were quiet. They were well-behaved in that moment in time. It's quite an image. It's quite a presentation. We know for a fact that when Donald Trump was picking his cabinet, that he wanted people who could obviously A, do the job, but he also wanted B, communicators, people who could convey a message that people would pay attention to, that people would understand. You can't have like a nerd's nerd being involved in something whose brain capacity is so much higher than everybody else's. And when they try to talk it down to like dumb people like me, it's like me no understandy. Like you can't do that. You have to have those people everywhere in the administration, but the people who are going to be the voice, the spokesperson for said department, agency, whatever, have to be able to communicate a message. And Noem certainly is communicating a message here. Was it a good thing to see Kristi Noem standing in front of this jail cell with gang members stripped down to their underwear? I have to think, I don't know. I have never been in a gang, so I'll defer to you, Ryan. Is it cool for your gang members to see you in your underwear with your tats all out in jail behind...
Tats out, yes. Underwear, no. Yeah. You definitely want to come tats a-blaring, but because that's intimidating. But when you are in your underwear, that's private time. And you don't want your gang members encroaching on private time.
Okay, so there's a lot of ways this could go. I love that you are like, let me check my rule book here. All right, section C3.2A says.
Yeah, it's in the gang code. there's a code of conduct.
I don't know if you'd be the worst person to be in a gang or the best.
I'd probably be mid-level. You know, I'd be
middle
on the,
management.
I'd be on the take from both sides.
That's what the concern would be. I'm wondering if this is a good message, because her message is, don't come. We will find you. We will hunt you down and we will do this to you. Donald Trump and his administration have been very forward and very consistent in their message of getting the bad guys. They're going to get the bad guys. And that was proof that they have gotten the bad guys. In all seriousness, was this a good message from Kristi Noem?
Yeah, I think so. Because it makes it very clear to... The point of the message was self-deport. If you don't, you're going to end up right over my shoulder, yeah. Right there. That was the point of the message. So, it's the whole don't come thing, but with action. You know, we talked about how Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's their very, very strict message to illegal immigrants was, do not come.
Vicky says, Annie, could it have been AI? It looked weird to me. I saw a lot of people talking about green screen. I didn't think so.
I don't think so either.
I didn't get that vibe.
It was a little, what I couldn't figure out was the logistics of getting people that, the kid in me went, wow, those are high bunk beds. Because there were so many people stacked up so high that I was like, wow, they got a lot of people in that shot. I mean, that it was impressive in and of itself. Aside from the fact that the whole point of it was, you're going to end up in an El Salvadorian jail if you're a criminal in the United States right now. So in that sense, I thought it was very effective.
Terry says on YouTube, that was freaking me out. I was scared for her. I think part of the point, Brad, is that she wanted to be delivering a message, what appeared to be maybe 10 feet in front of these gang members, which to me said, I'm not afraid of these people. I will get these people, and I am in control of these people. That was the message. But yeah, I'm thinking, like, if that were my daughter or something there, I'd be like, get the hell out of there.
It's funny you say that, because that is your initial, that's your instant reaction is, are you safe? Are you okay?
Yeah, kind of a,
yeah, you just sort of, for a second, and then you realize, oh yeah, she's doing a video. She must be fine.
Yeah, you look there. I would be worried, but you see some of the other pictures and photos from that event, and there are hundreds of guards surrounding her.
All masked up so that people can't tell what they look like.
Masked up
Christina
right here.
Christina was like, this is what I look like.
Well, she's got that hat on, though. You don't know what her head looks like.
What if those guards
What if it's bald? You wouldn't know. You'd see her in the streets and be like, that's not her.
That's Friar.
They didn't want those incredibly good-looking guards upstaging her.
It's definitely, there was a choice made there. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a choice. Someone said, let me find the comment too, because I want to give them credit. They wanted to know about, Dash. Were the underwear pink?
No. Wait, whose underwear? You're talking about in that shot or in the gangs? Because I'm kind of the gang expert on the show now, and I could probably speak to that.
The people whose underwear we could see, sir.
No, they weren't. They were white. They were like Roby.
Whose underwear? Ryan.
I didn't know which gang members.
Okay.
So in that shot, no.
This brings me to another question. Yeah, Dash please. Says, were the underwear pink? Is underwear automatically plural? Because I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Underwear is plural.
Why?
I'm not sure, because
it's not.
The only way for it to be singular would be for there just to be one leg hole. Like, it covers just the junk and the one leg.
Ryan, no one's listening anyway.
Not anymore.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
That's the only way. I thought
we
about this a lot.
Seven people in St. Louis are like, there's nothing to do today.
Yeah.
This is a 97.
What's he talking about?
I don't know.
It takes the pressure. Hey, this is going to be a great show.
Yeah.
We're just going to do whatever we want.
Nobody's going to know it. We're not going to podcast it.
Right. There's no record.
Brad, I'll ask you, is underwear plural?
No, I think it's singular. I think it's both, but when you're talking about one, it's just underwear.
I feel like my grandmother used to refer to them plurally, like in the they sense. The pronouns were they.
If you put on one pair of underwear, you're putting on a pair. That's two.
Why is it a pair?
I don't know, because you got two leg holes. That's why I assume. Or you call them underpants. Plural.
Don't boys' underwear, don't men's underwear have three holes?
Sort of, depending on.
Depend on the brand.
Yeah, depending on the brand. Yeah, exactly.
Some brands do, some brands don't.
Yeah, some brands you just got to tear right through. Told you we're going to do whatever we want today. Two leg holes. That's back to the point.
I'm going
to
throw this out to the people for the 2 o'clock hour. Because there's a segment that I've wanted to do that we've been kind of tossing around and it hasn't happened yet. And I don't know if it's a good idea or a bad idea. But our boss keeps telling us to take risks.
Really?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah, I guess he did. I don't know that he meant this, but
I think that we could have a very good conversation about things that men do that you it's like, it's just part of being, living the life as a man. There are things that men do that women have no idea about, don't understand the process of, and that women do. And I'm kind of talking about, like, for instance, it doesn't have to be all, I know everyone's thinking weird things right now, knock it off, but when it comes to makeup, if you had a gun to your head and you had to apply your makeup and try to actually make it look right.
Yeah.
Like
make
what I do to my. You're on. What did you eat for breakfast?
One donut.
Yeah, I'm sure. Three hot dogs and seven beers. Or for you, maybe just seven sips.
Couple of beers.
Couple of
little
beers.
Little bump.
Would you be able to apply makeup, even to a woman, would you be able to put makeup on a woman and make it look good?
Heck yeah.
Brad?
Yeah. Would he be able to do it?
No, you.
Oh, maybe.
Oh my God, you guys are so out of it. Women don't always know how to do this.
No, that's
you
true.
You couldn't possibly.
You know how many blogs there are out there? I just pull one of those up.
No, I'm saying to do it right now. Do you know how to do it?
Yeah, give a girl a smoky eye and send her out there.
Base coat, clear coat?
That's exactly right, Brad.
No. No.
Sealer? Yep.
If you're talking about cars or manicures, I'm not
turpentine.
100% sure. Yeah, yep. you guys are screwed. I wonder what other things out there exist that men are super curious about what women, like how women do certain things that they never have to deal with and the vice versa. So if you had some of those things and you're one of the 8 people listening in St. Louis today, thank you for being there. We love you.
Hi.
Get on the Annie Fry YouTube live chat and comment those things. And if we get enough of them, I have a few jotted down. Maybe the guys do too, because we've talked about this off air quite a bit. Maybe we'll have that very uncomfortable conversation in the 2 o'clock hour, which today would be the best day to do it, really.
Yeah, I would. So we'll do it.
That and maybe like the Christmas special.
You want to just rerun the Christmas special today? That's fine.
It's Christmas in St. Louis. Let's take a quick break. We're going to visit with Zach Smith. Hans has the day off. We're going to talk to him about the Trump executive orders affecting elections. He wants to get elections up and running the way they're supposed to by the time he's done. And he's got something to say about proof of citizenship and how long do we accept mail-in ballots, those types of things. We'll get the bottom of it with Zach Smith from the Heritage Foundation next.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I have an executive order for your attention on the very important subject of election integrity. We believe that this executive order is the farthest reaching executive action taken in the history of the Republic to secure our elections. Among numerous other aspects of this executive order, this is going to cut down on illegal immigrants on the voter rolls, ensure that the Department of Homeland Security and the data that they have available is being fully weaponized to ensure that illegal immigrants aren't voting. This will include a citizenship question on the federal voting form for the first time. This executive order instructs the EAC to cut federal funding to states that don't take reasonable steps to secure their election. This calls on the Department of Justice to vigorously prosecute election crimes, particularly in states that we don't believe are in compliance with federal law around election integrity. I could go on and on for a while, sir, but the compliance with National Election Day rules, cracking down and investigating and prosecuting foreign interference in our elections, revoking President Biden's Executive Order 14019, which essentially weaponized government to corrupt and pollute our election process. There's a lot in here, but we believe that these are very important steps that we need to be taking as an administration at your direction to ensure that our elections are as secure as they possibly can be.
Will Scharf, our guy there, reading over, or kind of clarifying, over the shoulder of Donald Trump and putting himself in a position to explain exactly how this executive order from Donald Trump is going to secure our elections here in the future. I want to get to our guest. We've got Zach Smith with us today. Hans has the day off. We're always excited to have Zach on the show. He is the legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, also co-host of SCOTUS 101. Zach, welcome back. It's good to have you here.
Well, thanks for Thanks for having me on the show today, Annie. I always joke I am a poor man's Hans von Spakovsky, but happy to play that role any day of the week.
No, not at all. We love having you here, and we know you know your stuff. One of the things that Donald Trump has been saying very consistently through, I don't know, December of 2020 about the election is he thinks they're unsecure. He's got questions with them. But now that he is back in his second term, he gets the opportunity to do something about it. I'm sure that there will be legal challenges to the executive order he signed. But Zach, what can you tell us about this effort that the president is making to secure our elections?
Well, look, this is a long overdue, much needed effort. And I think Will Sharpe, when he was explaining the, you know, kind of the contours of this executive order, hit on many of the high points. But look, I think it's important to put this in context, Annie. You had the Biden administration over the past 4+ years essentially weaponizing the federal government to try to turn it into a Democratic voter registration turnout machine, trying to weaponize essentially all aspects of the federal government to engage in these very problematic practices. And so what the Trump executive order does, it rescinds that previous Biden EO, but then it also directs the attorney general to enforce certain federal laws that are already on the books. And it also instructs the attorney general, the Department of Homeland Secretary, and others to take certain common sense steps to also remove barriers for states who want to use certain databases or other information to cross-check their voter rolls to make sure that only eligible voters are registered to vote. And all of those things, as far as I'm concerned, are very good policy steps for this administration to take.
Zach, in your opinion, like, what percentage of securing our elections, what percentage of fixing it needs to be clean voter rolls?
That is a large percentage of it, Annie. And, you know, some of the things that this EO does in particular, like allowing increased accessibility to certain databases, that is going to help that exponentially. But I think it's also important to recognize that this executive order, in part, orders the attorney general, other federal law enforcement agencies to focus on states enforcing federal election laws in states that are not taking the steps that they should be taking. Election administration is primarily in the realm of a state authority. State legislatures have primary responsibility for administering their elections, but there is a role for the federal government to play. The Constitution provides that Congress can act as a backstop in certain instances. And so, again, I'm encouraged to see President Trump issue this EO.
We're speaking with legal fellow from Heritage Foundation, Zach Smith. You know, I understand. I remember Joe Biden and his administration wanting to kind of federalize our election system. And I remember conservatives being like, elections are supposed to be managed by the states. So does this cross over? Is it a conflict of interest now for the for the Trump administration to be saying, OK, across the board, all the states, here are the things you need to do?
No, it's not. And I would say that's not what this order does, Annie. You know, the big pushback we saw from several years ago was when House and Senate Democrats tried to pass H.R. 1 and Senate Bill 1, respectively, which, of course, was an effort to nationalize many aspects of federal election law, something that had never before been done in our nation's history. What this executive order that Donald Trump does, it essentially requires the attorney general to enforce current laws that Congress has already passed. It doesn't create a new law. And then to provide extra assistance to the states in administering their elections and in making sure that federal law is being enforced in those states that are not taking those common sense steps that are needed. So under this executive order, primary responsibility for election administration still resides with the states. This order respects that. It understands it, but is providing very necessary, very helpful federal resources to assist the states in their efforts.
Zach, this is Ryan. Just listening to Will Sharpe kind of explain the EO there at the beginning of the segment, it sounded like there was a lot packed into this one executive order. And so my question is that a strategy legally that they're trying to push through a lot in one? Because normally, don't you just focus on one particular thing per executive order?
No, not necessarily. And there is a lot, but I think it shows how many moving pieces there are in this election administration front. And so a lot of the actions that are that are occurring, being instructed to take place in this executive order. For instance, the president is ordering the attorney general to take several actions in several distinct areas. The same thing with the Secretary of Homeland Security, as well as other federal officials. And so while there are a lot of moving pieces to this EO, they all tie together in a very common sense way that will ultimately make our elections more safe and more secure at the end of the day.
So senior legal fellow Zach Smith with us right now. We're excited to have him in to talk about this executive order from the president of the United States. I'm curious how much legal challenge you expect to have if any of this is, you know, just locked tight and is going to be able to be implemented. It seems like they put something out. Everybody on Trump's side goes, hooray, we finally did it. And then the next day it's like, no, we didn't. And then we have activist judges and they get in the way. And then it's hard to say nothing happens because he's only been the president for 2 months once again. What is your thoughts on the legal challenges that will be faced with this EO?
Well, I have no doubt that legal challenges will be fired. It's almost a reflexive impulse at this point. Whenever the president issues an EO, there's kind of an army of left-leaning lawyers lined up to challenge it in some form or fashion. What's going to be interesting about this executive order, because so much of election law does take place in the states, because so much of election law is state-based, I suspect some of these challenges may come up in unique settings in state courts as opposed to federal courts, as we've seen in the past. And we'll also have to wait and see. The president ordered some specific actions to be taken with revisions to the federal form that's used to register voters and that sort of thing. And so I suspect we may see challenges come up at each piece of implementation of these policies along the way. But again, ultimately, I'm skeptical that those challenges will be successful, because essentially what this order, again, is trying to do is to order the Attorney General to enforce already existing on the books federal laws, and then to also provide certain resources and assistance to states in administering their own elections.
So, Zach, this is Ryan again. If this is already stuff that's on the books, I guess my question is, why is the EO necessary if it's just saying, well, this already exists?
Well, unfortunately, I think you saw the Biden administration refusing to enforce some common sense black letter laws that were already on the books, or even acting in defiance of some of those laws. And so one of the things this EO does, it repeals one of the Biden EOs that, again, tried to weaponize the entire federal government. So in part, this is reversing some of the damage, some of the undermining of the rule of law that happened under the Biden administration. The other issue that's taken place is that some courts, some departments within the federal government, the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice, has historically been a very radical division of DOJ, staffed with very left-leaning radical lawyers. I suspect Harmeet Dhillon, who is the new Assistant Attorney General in charge of that division, will correct some of those issues. But part of this EO is also necessary to correct some of the erroneous interpretations of law that that division, other departments of the government, have taken as well. And so a lot of this is Donald Trump doing his best to set his house in order, and then to also take proactive steps to help make sure our elections are safe and secure moving forward.
We're speaking with Zach Smith right now. You are a co-host of SCOTUS 101. I'm curious on your thoughts of the current makeup of the Supreme Court. Donald Trump enjoys the appointment of, what, three of the justices that make up a third of the Supreme Court right now. Yet it seems as though some of the rulings that have come out don't necessarily favor Donald Trump as much as he certainly would like them to. How do you feel Donald Trump will fare with many of these cases, these challenges, if should they get to the Supreme Court? How do you think he'll fare with this current makeup of nine justices?
Well, I joke, Annie. My crystal ball is a little cloudy these days on predicting outcomes at the Supreme Court. It's hard to say, truthfully. And look, I think two things to what you said. One, I think, you know, the fact that the supposedly conservative justices don't always agree with each other shows that originalism, textualism does not lead to monolithic outcomes. They are not politically driven results. So there are often, you know, differences in interpretation that the justices have and how they apply those originalist and textualist methods. The other thing I would say is it will be interesting to watch and see, because so far the court has had to avoid weighing in on the merits of many of these challenges due to procedural hurdles that have come up along the way. And I suspect the runway on those procedural hurdle objections are about to run out. And I suspect the court will have to take up some of these issues as they come before the justices. And the last thing I'll say on that front, you know, it'll be very interesting to watch and see what Justice Amy Coney Barrett does, particularly compared to some of our other conservative colleagues like Justice Gorsuch, Justice Brett Kavanaugh, and then Justice Thomas and Justice Samuel Alito. There is some disagreement among some of the conservative justices on some of these issues, how they should be applied, what the court's role is in resolving these issues. So that will be a very interesting dynamic to watch play out.
Zach, I want to ask you a question about something that I didn't ask you ahead of time, your experience or expertise on this issue. So if you don't know a lot about this, just let us know and we can maybe revisit it another time. But part of this election EO talks about being able to show proof of citizenship and so on and so forth. And we had several people in our live chat that follows us on our Annie Fry YouTube channel talking about Real ID. I don't know how much you know about Real ID. Are you well versed in that?
I'm only familiar with Real ID at a 10,000 foot level. Essentially, I think, as I understand it, it requires states to confirm citizenship or other proof of identity before issuing a state ID. I know TSA is supposed to start requiring Real ID before you can use your state identification card to board airplanes in the very near future. But look, Annie, fundamentally what this comes down to is there needs to be some way to verify, other than just a person's bare assertion, that they are who they say they are and that, in fact, they are not disqualified from voting. And so, states obviously requiring a photo ID, great. That's a good first step. Some states also require a specific voter ID number. Some states require the last four of a voter's social security number, particularly if those voters are voting by absentee ballots. So all of those types of measures are certainly steps in the right direction in making sure that the individual voting is who they say they are and that they are, in fact, eligible to cast that ballot.
Yeah, it just seems strange to me. Like, Real ID seems a little more complicated to acquire than just getting, a state-issued ID or a license. And it's just interesting to me that this mandate is being put out on Real ID to say you need to have this, more secure form of identification, but yet it's racist to suggest that people should be able to show free state-issued IDs to vote. I don't understand how both of those things can be advocated for at the same time.
No, I think it's a great point. I think it highlights the logical inconsistencies of the positions of many folks on the left. And look, if you look at the polling on showing voter ID, Annie, I don't think it will come as a surprise that vast majorities of voters across all demographics are very supportive of the idea that you should have to show ID or prove that you are who you say you are in some way before you're eligible to cast a ballot.
Well, we appreciate you, Zach. You are no second place to Hans von Spakovsky. We love him and we love you as well. And we appreciate your time today.
Of course. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yep, of course. Bye-bye. Zach Smith, the legal fellow from Heritage Foundation, giving us a lowdown on the executive order coming out of the Trump administration, telling us about how he is going to tighten up and secure our election system. It's good to hear. And then I just pause and wait for all of the legal challenges to happen. So I guess we're probably in that phase right now. All right. When we come back, Ryan Wiggins with Wiggins America. Very, very key one today. What is it?
Science-backed ways to seem smarter than you are.
If only we could get an expert.
Yeah. I'm just reporting on this. I am smarter than I am.
Than you are. We'll be right back. It's been
right now.
I do not know what you're thinking right now. I don't need to know what you're thinking right now. Neither do they.
All right, let's just do Wiggins America.
Wiggins! Oh! Wiggins!
That was a close one, folks. You're probably thinking about Hostess. Little Debbie.
What else would it be? I'm thinking about snack cakes all the time.
I know.
Creamy centers. Yum. Anyway, this is science-backed tricks to make you seem smarter than you are.
Let me ask you this. Did you read this whole article already?
Yeah.
Do you do any of these?
I don't think so.
Would you tell would you tell us if you did?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
But I really love these because they're the kind of things that you go, yeah, that would work, wouldn't it? Let's start with the first one. Use a middle initial. So no matter where you are, have people refer to you as not just John Kennedy,
Ryan,
but John F.
Kennedy. What is your middle initial?
R.
All right, let's get people on the YouTube chat to guess what Ryan's middle name is.
R?
Yeah, it's R.
Is it Ryan Ryan?
It is. It's Ryan Ryan. Yeah.
Yeah, middle initial. That's the one in between.
Yep.
R?
Yep.
Middle initial, Brad?
M.
Mine is E. Let's see if people can get it. R-M-E-R-E-M.
It's Erica, isn't it?
You have to guess in the chat, and we will congratulate the people who get it correct.
And my little hint for me, I sometimes use X in the middle because it's Ryan X2.
I love the fact that your name forever will now be Ryan Wiggins.
Ryan Wiggins.
Your parents are like, I don't know.
I think that sounds like something I said when I was two. Like they had shown me what my name was and I couldn't remember it. I'm Ryan Wiggins. Use your middle initial, John F. Kennedy, Franklin D. Roosevelt. It turns out there might be a reason why so many people who hold prominent places in history used a middle initial.
Also, those two people had dynastic families in American politics, so you might need to discern them a little bit more.
Yeah, that's also true.
So I love how they're like, in order to look smart, just do what JFK did.
Not everything.
No.
But most things.
Or everyone.
Listening to the radio, did you hear the little comment there from Annie, or did you have to crank it up to hear that? Because we heard it. I just don't know if you did. You can rewind, I think, still on the Odyssey app.
My best commentary is barely audible.
Yes, it is. All right. More ways to sound smarter than you actually are, or to become smarter than you actually are. Make graphs.
Ryan Rutherford Wiggins.
Keep guessing. I'm not going to tell you until...
No, we'll maybe tell you in the 2 o'clock hour.
We'll tell you in the 2 o'clock hour. Make graphs.
It's Rebecca, isn't it?
Research conducted at Cornell suggests that people are more likely to trust a source if it contains graphs.
I'm disappointed that you don't have a graph for this segment.
Oh, yeah. That would have been like a lot of work, though. And you know how I hate that. In one of Cornell's studies, participants read a document on the effectiveness of new cold medication. One report contained a graph. The other didn't. The other one with the graph got much more participation and trust put in it, according to that study. So, no matter what you do, use your middle initial and make graphs.
In the study, did the graph actually reflect the substance of the...
Yeah, it was real. It was all real data. Just one of them was presented with a graph. The other one was not.
What was not? When I read through articles, I see cold a headline medicine. That I like. If they're... aren't bold headlines that divide up the article, I'm not reading it. I will go through and look at the bold headlines, like if it's like ways you can appear smarter. Mm. I need those to be listed in bold headlines.
Great
and
example.
Then if one of those headlines interests me, then I read the paragraphs under it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to read 500 words.
Yeah, this is how Axios appears smarter than they are. They're not actually that smart.
I love Axios's presentation. They break it down in like bite-sized pieces, so you're constantly making a decision. Do I want to know more? I think I want to know more, or I think I've learned what I need to learn here. What was the other part of that you just said? Graphs? Oh,
just graphs.
I would be help. Visual aids would help me consume things faster. I can read words and retain words, but that is the most difficult way for me to learn something. Is just reading and trying to retain it.
Number three, skip that drink. And it's not just because people tend to do stupid things when they're drunk. Yeah, a joint study conducted by the University of Michigan and the University of Pennsylvania revealed that merely seeing someone hold a drink is enough to make them seem less intelligent. So don't even hold a drink near you.
If we're going to cite American historically political figures, what about Marco Rubio? He's the Secretary of State now.
No, it has to be an alcoholic drink, not water.
You don't know what was in that bottle.
Was it vodka?
I don't know. They just, in a congressional hearing yesterday, accused Pete Hegseth of maybe drinking something when he was at a podium and had a sip of water.
That's right. He's trying to make him
Pete stupid. Hegseth is not allowed to drink anything anymore without the Democrats being like, what's in that?
Oh, you're looking kind of hydrated there, SecDef. All right, number four, believe in yourself.
Oh.
Nothing projects intelligence quite like confidence. Now, when you asked ahead of time if there's any of them that I do.
This one hit?
This one hits pretty hard, pretty close to home. Yeah, you just have to come in just blazing. And people will assume, oh, he must know what he's talking about.
I tell that to my kids when they're doing things for the first time that they need to do, they need to go do. It's like, you just got to project. Like, what are the options when you proceed into doing something for the first time? You're going to succeed or you're going to fail. One of those two. There might be something that happens in the middle where you could argue, oh, that was better than it could have been, or that didn't go as well as it could have, but it's not a complete and total failure. But you might as well psych yourself up. Don't be a jackwagon about it. Like, don't go acting like you're the best to ever do the thing you've never done before. But you might as well tell yourself that you're good at it. You might as well tell yourself that you are capable of said thing and go in there with that juiced confidence. It can't hurt you.
It definitely can't, especially for kids. That helps making teams if you just look confident, like, yes, you know what you're doing, even if you don't.
Yeah.
It helps you intimidate an opponent in sports if you just look confident. Right, number five.
By the way, I'm reading some of our middle names, and I might want to upgrade mine.
From Erica?
These are good names.
Number five is write simply. If you're really smart, you shouldn't have to use big words to
Facts.
Broadcast it. This is very true.
That's good English. Good. Yes.
Go on.
Well, it's just if you're actually trying to communicate something through writing, are you trying to fill a quota of words and pages, or are you trying to communicate a message? If you can take anything extra out of the sentence that you're writing, take it out. If you can convey the message, maybe you can use a better word, but using more words isn't hardly ever better, just mm-hmm. for the sake of using words.
Yeah, that's why I use emojis so much.
Like fist bump, flag, fire.
Yeah, also poop. Like, oh no, instead of saying, oh no, it's just poop.
What's the title of this segment again?
How to appear smarter than you are.
Okay, go on.
Write simply. True intelligence speaks for itself, so you don't have to show off your impressive vocabulary. That's very true. You can spot that quickly if somebody's trying to do that. So write simply. Number six, speak expressively. I think we understand this in broadcast. This is what you're supposed to do. Communication expert Leonard Mildenhall now makes the case that even if two people say the exact same thing, the one who says it most expressively will be perceived as being smarter. All right. Whatever you were going to say there, I was going to be like, oh, that's very expressive. Are you trying to project? And you just didn't say anything. So thanks for the material. Number seven.
You're welcome.
Number seven. Look them in the eye. We know you're supposed to do this anyway. It's good manners. But it's true that it also makes you look smarter. In a study conducted at Loyola University, participants who intentionally managed their eye contact scored significantly higher on perceived intelligence.
Brad, how much eye contact is too much eye contact?
Depends on what you're talking about. I think it's like if you go like more than a few seconds without blinking, that's too much.
Well, that doesn't break blinking doesn't break eye contact.
I don't know, man.
Creepiest eye contact is when somebody's sleeping.
Eyes are open.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
He's just staring at me.
Oh God, blink. You just close their eyes at once.
How much eye contact is too much eye contact? I don't know. A minute.
Do you struggle? What kind of grade, Brad, do you give yourself on appropriate eye contact?
B+.
Right. I'm going to refer back to number
A plus.
Four here. Say believe in yourself. I'm going to say I give myself 100% on eye contact. I actually don't think about it, and I think that's the point.
Oh, for sure.
Is if you start thinking about it, it gets weird, and if you're not doing it at all, it's also weird.
How many more do you have?
Just a couple.
Yeah.
One more?
I give myself a C on eye contact because
really?
It's all I'm doing is thinking about it.
Always?
Always.
Oh,
like right now.
No, that's terrible. Well, now
don't look
we are.
At me.
Yeah, now it's awkward.
Don't look at me.
I'm going to look into the camera and just assume that you're looking back at me.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. Wear nerd glasses is number eight. Wear glasses.
Wear glasses.
Yeah. Wear nerd glasses.
Yeah. Wear nerd glasses. Number nine is keep pace with the crowd. And they say this one's literal. I know it may sound silly, but research conducted at Boston University shows that it's true. It's called timescale bias, and it refers to a tendency to attribute greater intelligence based on mental attributes like consciousness, awareness, and intention to people.
What was the headline?
Keep pace with the crowd. Basically, know your place in society is what that's saying.
I'm going to Macoupin County to speak this weekend. I don't know if there are tickets left, but if you want to go to the Lincoln Day Dinner at Macoupin County, I'll be there, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I said, I always say when I do these things, like, how long would you like me to speak? Because some people will be like, oh, 5 to 10 minutes would be fine. whatever you think. And then, like this weekend, they go 30 minutes, but if you're on a roll, keep going.
Wow.
Yeah. And there are times...
Just giving a full sermon.
There are times where... not in my church. That, oh. Shorter. There are times where I'll be doing these things and I'm working the 5 to 10 minute range, maybe closer to the 10 minute range, and it goes 18 minutes. And I can tell when I'm done that people are like, they're listening. They're fully engaged. You're watching the crowd. You're seeing that they are listening to what you have to say. But if I'm given a 30 minute window and I'm 18 minutes in and people are checking their watches, which maybe they are, or, you know, kind of shuffling papers or reading the program or whatever, checking their phones, I'm wrapping that sucker.
Like, yeah, read the room.
Yes. You have to be able to look out and see, like, do people want more? Are people happy and content? And if they're happy and content and that's kind of, they're not like leaning forward in their seats, you need to be in the bottom of the eighth inning at that point. You need to not wait for people to look bored to stop talking.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Last one. It's obvious. Dress for success.
Oh, yeah.
You have to dress like you know what you're doing.
That's what we do here every day.
We do it every day with these hats and this hair. These headphones.
My middle initial is E. Ryan's is R. I know you're Ryan. Ryan. Uh-huh. Brad's is M, and we're letting you guess what our middle names are. We'll reveal it in the 2 o'clock hour. Don't let us forget to reveal it. And your guesses so far, some of them are fantastic. Some of them look like upgrades. Some of them are hilarious. We'll be right back with Tyrus. Don't go away.